right? Yes, yes.
You can sit here?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay,
there we go.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back, or welcome. I'm the speaker this evening. My name is Roland Cohen, and I've been talking for a long time. it's one way of saying it. So I thought a really interesting topic for tonight would be one that, you know how at the bottom of an email, of your own emails, outgoing emails, you have a choice of having a signature and a quote. So my latest quote for the last 4 or 5 months has been from Chögyam Trungpa, the founder of Shambhala. And the quote is, pain is not a punishment, pleasure is not a reward. And this is something that I find very, sometimes a little bit of a, you know, kind of you go, what does that mean? But other times it's a very kind of penetrating statement. And it's connected with another statement by another great teacher, Suzuki Roshi, a Zen teacher. And his statement was, hell is not punishment, it's training. So, these are very kind of, I guess the word that I would use is a kind of non-dualistic kind of statements. Being that usually when we feel bad in any way, there's an immediate desire to blame, to find the cause and to blame somewhere. If we may blame ourselves, I did something wrong. We may blame someone else. I feel bad because they did this. But there's always a tendency in us to try to find the reason that we feel bad and then to either retaliate or to riff on it, you know, to just continually kind of try to figure it out. What did I do wrong? Why did they do that? And so this instruction, pain is not a punishment, is to me, that's really saying that we have the option to stay with the experience rather than our interpretation of the experience. And that if we stay with the experience, it can actually enter us into a whole path of how to actually utilize painful situations in our life as a means of entering more fully into each moment, being able to be unconditionally present to each moment. Because pain is one of the things it's hard for us to be unconditional with. Maybe one of the hardest things. It's pretty not so hard with pleasure to go, just let go and go, oh yeah, and be unconditional about it. But pain is, we immediately start to hedge, we start to figure out how do I get back to how I was feeling, this is not how I want to feel, you know, how do I get a handle on this, how do I get an angle on it, how do I get rid of it, there's all these agendas and all of these sort of approaches that we immediately come up with. So, obviously, our training as meditators is to really notice what's happening, which requires a bit of relaxation. The general instruction of working with pain of any kind is to kind of first just relax with it, feel it, actually feel the physical sensation, the psychological sensation, whatever it is. And then actually become inquisitive. That's the second part. Become inquisitive and look into it and just see, what is this? Look at these, all these thoughts. Isn't that interesting? And then, you know, if you take that attitude towards it, it becomes extraordinarily workable, because we're not fighting with ourselves. We're not fighting with our experience. We're not rejecting our experience. We're actually utilizing our experience. So in a way, pain can become an opportunity for friendship and for a deepening of intimacy. Obviously, we know that in our lives. Frequently, you know, fights with people, that we hate to have a fight. It's so painful. But oftentimes, it brings out stuff that has to come out, and you end up feeling a deeper bond or a deeper sense of potential communication, hopefully, if you actually go through it and look at it. And then there's pleasure. Pleasure is not a reward. So, you know, usually when we feel pleasure, there's a sense of, yeah, I got it right. You know, this is great. This is the result of doing it right. It's like, it is definitely the sense of reward. I'm in the right place at the right time. This is really cool. And there's a whole kind of praising process that goes on. So praise and blame, you know, the pain gets the blame and the pleasure gets the praise. So it's praise and blame, which is, you know, one of the pairs of activities that we engage ourselves in from a Buddhist perspective that are kind of equal. You know, you can praise, you can blame, but that doesn't really change the experience. The experience is still there to relate with. So we're interested in getting down to, as practitioners, getting down to an unconditional level of experience of whatever it is that's going on now. So if there's pleasure taking place, we don't have to grab on to all of the storylines about how we, you know, what good fortune we have. I mean, oftentimes if you do that, it's really the death knell of the situation. The moment you start to say how you got this because you deserved it, it's finished. You're finished, it seems. So pleasure sometimes is more difficult to actually be sane with, because, you know, pain is so... it's so kind of difficult that we have to rouse ourselves to kind of face it. Pleasure, on the other hand, is easy. It's easy to just go with the pleasure. So we don't want to rouse ourselves to face it. Pain, we could see why it might be good, because secretly we think maybe if we do relate with it properly, it'll go away. You know, part of us probably still thinks that. But as we relate with pain directly over time, as a practitioner, you begin to actually, your whole attitude starts to shift about your experience in general. That experience becomes just part of the path. Bringing yourself directly in touch with your experience is what it means to be a practitioner, and what it means to actually be sane. Because then we're not building up one and then come crashing down and the other happens. That's called tipping the canoe. Trigam Trungpa's talk about tipping the canoe, you know? You're going up and you're going, oh, this is great, I'm going up and up and up and up. Oh my God, this is fantastic, let's keep it going. But the other end is way down there. And it's gonna have to reach equilibrium. You're gonna have to crash at some point. So if you build up with praise, you build up the pleasure, and you hold on to it, it's creating an inevitable crash. That you then, what you're in is what's called a roller coaster, which is what a lot of our lives are like, emotional roller coasters. Because we are building up, And then when we have the pain, we are fighting against it. And we're trying to get rid of it, and we're trying to change it, escape it. So I think it might be interesting for us to just think for a minute or contemplate for a minute. If you can remember something painful in the recent past, it could be a physical pain, an emotional pain, it could be a spiritual pain, whatever you want to call it. To just think about that for a moment and see what did it provoke, what does it provoke in you? That, when you have pain, what does that provoke? I think it might be good to actually, if we're okay with that, to just turn towards one person. Have a few minutes to contemplate it first, right now. We'll just do pain first. Pain is so much easier than pleasure. It's so in your face. And just contemplate, think about, you know, what's really been painful for you. And then we will break into dialogues, two people. And we'll just take a few minutes each to say, what do I do when pain arises? What did I do in this case? What did it provoke? Where did I go with it? And can I see the process? Can I see the alternatives? Does everybody have something? Anybody not? Raise your hand if you're not there yet.
If you need something.
You're not quite there yet? Okay.
It's hard picking which one.
It's hard to pick which one. Okay. So we'll just... count off. I'll be 1, 2, 1, 2, okay? 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. So I'll stay out. I'll drop out. That's okay. You two will be together. Okay? So let's
okay,
do that.
Two, one, two.
Or two. Let's put this on pause.
This is so funny. You do such silly things.
Okay, so we'll rejoin the circle at this point. Please. Please feel free to just say a couple of things that might occur to you as interesting enough to share about this that came up.
You took the secret away. Now I've figured it all out. Identified what happens in pain and pleasure, and I didn't know before, and I was living in ignorant bliss.
What about ignorant pain, too?
It was an excellent exercise. Thank
good.
You.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. Interesting, huh?
One thing that I have thought of many times before this is, but tonight also, intractable physical pain is for me I can't just be with that pain. I've never been able to do it. Whereas I was telling Trudy, pain about things that happened in the past. In a way, it's like the physical pain. I want to get rid of it at any cost. But when the physical pain, you know, for example, an abscess tooth, that's my best example. Mm. There's nothing you can do about that pain. And there's no painkillers, don't touch it. and there's nothing you can do. But when you finally go to the dentist, and the dentist opens up the abscess, and you get rid of the infection, then it's over with. Whereas the emotional pain is still there, and comes up again. So, I find it really difficult to, I mean, I know what I should do. I find it really difficult to do it. That pain just hangs out. But also, you know, I have wonderful pleasurable memories of wonderful pleasure that still give me pleasure, you know, when I think of them. So,
right.
It's a two-edged sword, I guess.
Well, one of my experiences was somewhat similar. It was a physical thing. And I couldn't, get rid of it. You know, I was in the emergency room. Nobody tried to figure out how to get rid of it. And I think that brings up the element of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, not only trying to find the solution, but being in a situation where, you know, like let's say you're walking around with an abscess tooth, you want to know how to get in there and get it fixed. But if you have something you're not too sure it's going to go away, it's just this fear. And so you're living with not only putting up with the pain, but the fear and the emotion, and that type of emotion goes on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. I feel like for me the goal is to see them as equal as I go along. In this physical form, it seems to take a little more time to actually experience it as equal. Probably takes a lifetime, actually, but for me the goal would be, the path to be on for me is to just remember the law of attraction, you know, whatever I'm thinking about, it's going to be what's present, and I have the ability to change that thought in an instant, and so tragedy can be turned around, pain can be turned around just by my thinking. And I'm learning more and more about that, and I'm demonstrating more of that in my life. And then you wake up in the morning and you just smile.
As long as you don't have an abscess too.
As long as you can smile for that.
I took your exercise to be very profound pain and very profound pleasure. I didn't take sort of something that I would think is, ouch, that's painful. Oh, great, that's nice. You know, it was very profound, and I found that profound spiritual or existential pain only makes sense when you stop doing anything about it, when you shut up and sit still. And then the profound pleasure, I realized that never goes away either, because it becomes part of your fabric, who you are, and it never goes away. I mean, you don't always feel it to the same degree, you know. I can't remember the example I even used, but the lifetime of very profound pleasurable experiences, they never go away. They're always pleasurable. I think you said something like you can always recall them. And not just the memory, but the sensations, the feelings, that, and it becomes part of who you are. And I think the same thing with the pain. Only I learn a lot later in life how to make that part of who I am and not run from it. I'll take the pleasure anytime. I'm just learning how to take the pain. But it was an excellent exercise. I think I'll be thinking about it for a little while.
There's a statement by a great Tibetan master, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, who said that the mark of a practitioner is the ability to bring painful situations to the path.
We also have the fact that suffering is a noble truth.
Okay, that was my next thing.
That is a very profound thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's universal.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly remind myself, this is a noble truth. When it's happening and I'm lost in it,
yeah,
and it's taking me over, it's just a reminder. It's a wake up.
Yeah.
And it's there all the time for everyone. And it never goes away.
But there's another noble truth as well, which is called the cessation of suffering.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those are both equally true.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an interesting point, and one that I was thinking about this talk, actually. That exact thing. Because, we tend to think that pain, the truth of suffering, doesn't end. We tend to think that that's always there. But actually, there doesn't have to be a problem with suffering. This is the message. From the point of view of basic goodness, pain and pleasure, there's no fundamental problem with either of them. Fundamental problem. This is the point. So therefore, they're both workable. They're both experienceable as they are, as part of existence, without it being some anomalous thing that you're not supposed to experience, you're not supposed to have. And a very interesting thing is, like in Tibet, there was this, I love this one, I hate to hear myself say it, but there was a study done. They came up with some interesting facts, the famous they. But apparently this really was a study of some kind, that it was discovered that many people in Tibet who went through terrible, intense suffering during the Chinese invasion, even things like being tortured or being raped or horrible things that are traumatizing and normally would create PTSD, that there was an amazing much lower incidence of PTSD in the Tibetans. And so there was a kind of a curiosity about that. Why would that be? And it turns out that there's a very common cultural thread there, which is that there's a view that when you have intense suffering, it's actually using up bad karma. So it's actually a way to purify. So it can be viewed as a positive thing. You can use it in a positive way, rather than this thing that this is bad, I'm being punished, I'm bad. This pain represents my being bad, or life is bad. And then sort of embedding that in yourself, that it's not okay. And therefore, the trauma seems to go much deeper. Or you're somehow part of making it more, more embedded somehow by fighting it and by trying to get rid of it. Which is not to say that they're passive, that people are passive in the midst of suffering. It's an active way of relating with it. I think this is very, very interesting, because as a person on the path, in a way, that's precisely what we're doing. We're inviting all experiences to be as they are. And this enables us to enter into them and to utilize them as a forward motion in our lives, as the path forward. Because there's something more basic than all of these extremes. So in Buddhism, it's taught that there are worldly dharmas. The eight worldly dharmas. Dharmas just means a thing or an occurrence, a phenomenon. And they are, I just wrote them down, pleasure and pain, loss and gain, praise and blame, fame and disgrace. The eight worldly dharmas. And so the message is the same with those, that from the point of view of our basic being, none of those have to be a problem, neither the positive side or the negative side. And that they're both temporary. The positive side and the negative side are equally temporary and impermanent.
And like a scale that we sort of control from tipping too far one way or the other?
Yeah, precisely. And sometimes, if you're experiencing disgrace, for instance, you can think, well, this is just the other side, the flip of the same coin as praise, as
fame.
Yeah.
Fame.
As fame. So you can kind of see it as a, just a kind of an illusion, an illusory thing.
Can you kind of step out of it at the same time with that sort of point of view and not really have to feel either sensation? You can be more of an observer.
Well, I think you can have perspective on them rather than feeling that you have to believe that your life is now over, like what you were saying. I've experienced the same thing. You know, when you think, this is it, I'm going to be this way the rest of my life, my life is screwed. I'm doomed. That's my favorite one. I'm doomed. You know, I'm doomed to this. And which is kind of depression. Depression has elements of that sometimes. The sense of, if you look into the future, all you see is the depression. You look back, you think you've always been depressed. It's an interesting phenomenon. And yet, it's not true. You know, there have been times when you weren't depressed. But the nature of depression is it appears to be endless in both directions.
I'm curious about that detached kind of observer. I'm not saying that this is what you're advocating, but I'm reminded of being in Boulder of the 80s, 90s. My earliest brushing up against was friends in Boulder then, and I was not particularly attracted to my experience, and I'm sure part of it was me. That where I want to go with this is that there was a kind of detached, aloof arrogance in some of what I experienced. And I had some other friends who also had that experience. And so we were wondering then, and now I want to fast forward to now, that I don't think, but I'm just learning about, in terms of the Buddhist perspective, I don't think it's about like becoming the observer. I think it's more leaning in. So
I experience that. I think we all from time to time experience that arrogance when we, you know, we look at others that don't seem to be quite as spiritually evolved as we think we are. and the way that I get back on track is I always think of the Dalai Lama, because he's pure love. He to me is a messenger of compassion in our day. And what does he say? His religion is
kindness.
There it is. I mean, if you can connect back to that, how can you be arrogant or see other people as arrogant? I mean, you can, but it's okay.
I think, you know, to go with what you were just talking about, Margo, which is a very interesting point. I think that there's this understanding in the path, the meditative path, of how to work with these extremes. You know, we could call them extremes. Extreme pleasure, which we hold on to because we love it, and extreme pain that we're just trying to somehow get rid of. And yeah, you do work with, you work with what's called touch and go. It's really one of the main ways we work with it, which is that we're not dwelling on, we're not fixating on either one. So fixation is the issue. Fixation means that you just, that's all you can see. That's all, you know, you're just on that and there's nothing else. So if you do touch and go, you see, touch and go is you touch on it lightly, you experience it, and then you go to a different experience. So if there's pain, physical pain, for instance, there's some part of your body is not in pain. And you can actually go to that part of the body that's not in pain. You can shift your mind to focus on and go back and forth. So this is one aspect, one way to do it, touch and go. And what you discover is that there's actual contrast that develops. Rather than it just being one thing, you begin to see that a lot of it is how we fixate on that one thing that makes it so big and so solid. So if we can go back and forth, touch and go, we begin to develop perspective on our experience.
Can you expand on the touch part?
Yeah, it varies a lot depending upon what's going on. But essentially, touch means in your experience, if it's something internal that you're experiencing emotionally, you touch it, you notice it, you feel it. You touch is described like this, touch, meeting something. It's not clutch. Touch, not clutch.
Okay.
And touch, not push. Okay? Touch is just touch. And then go means you don't need to hold on to it. It's just release, basically. And then you just let it be there, and sure, you can shift your attention to something else. And then you touch and go like that. And it's very interesting if you do that with difficult emotions, you can develop some kind of perspective. Can happen. Yeah. but then there's also the notion of skill and practice, that the more you do face your experience, the more you begin to see your tendency to fixate and how you do it. And as you become more familiar with that from having been there, doing it, been there, done that, over and over and over again in meditation, you begin to see that you don't have to do that, that that's a choice you're making. And so gradually you learn to see the tendency. You start to pick up on the tendency before you get sucked into the full-blown fixation. So there's a skill that develops where you begin to ride your experience in the sense of, you know, you see all the things that draw you to fixate, and you begin to ride this razor's edge, which is really, the razor's edge is really kindness and softness towards yourself. It's the ability to be with what's there as it is and not try to change it. And if you can do that, then gradually you can be with the very beginning of these things. So it's a softness, actually, that develops. Kindness towards yourself. We call it Maitri. We call it Maitri, loving kindness. The development of that softness and ability to be with your experience and not reject it. Or not feel you have to be this way or that way. And then that leads to a kind of balance of experience, where you start to be unafraid of your experiences, because you can actually be with any experience, and that's a tremendous feeling of relief, to not have to feel that you have to run from something. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, hell, if there's a painkiller that's going to help, why the hell not take it, you know? That's what I say. But at the same time, I have to tell you that I once developed 3 bulging discs, which I still have in my neck. But when it first happened, they were pinching a nerve going down all the way to my thumb and up into my head. Mm-hmm. And it was on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it was around an 8. Just below where you're screaming, right? Mm-hmm. Just below screaming pain. So it's about as much as you can handle. And it was constant. And the only thing that relieved it a little bit was to put my hand like this. Just the slightest relief. But even that, it was still painful. And I found that I could meditate. In other words, just if I didn't have to do anything else, I could just be with the pain. But if I had to do something else, the pain was too distracting, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So but to just be able to relate with just the pain, I actually could. It wasn't impossible. But it requires really working at it. Yeah.
I think it's time to stop.
It's time to stop.
Before we stop,
yeah.
I would like to wish Bill a happy birthday tomorrow. Yeah. Pain and suffering of aging.
So we have a song that we sing for someone's birthday. Instead of happy birthday, we say cheerful birthday, because happy and sad are these two extremes.
Wow.
So we say cheerful, which is actually more unconditional. Cheerful birthday to you.
Cheerful birthday to you. Cheerful birthday, dear Bill. Cheerful birthday to you.
Thank you.
You want to give a speech, Bill? Or?
No, we don't have time. Mary hasn't been around too much, so why don't we just quickly go around and say who, at least what our name is. I'm Bill.
Oh, okay. I'm Fiona. Fiona, I know.
I'm Carol.
I'm Trudy.
Eric.
Paul.
Margot.
Carolyn.
Tim.
Roland.
And I almost got it.
And you're Mary? Mary, was it?
Mary.
Is this your first time here, Mary?
I've been here once or twice before when you were leading the group.
Great.
And I just live next door, so I hang out here.
Fantastic. Great.
And there are save the date sheets. I'll put them back on the table over there. If anybody wants one, are you going to announce about Sunday?
Yeah. So this Sunday is our Nintun. We sit from 9 to 11:30, or 11:15, I guess. Then we have refreshments. And then next Thursday will be another talk. And a week from tomorrow evening, we're going to be learning Shambhala songs here. Bill Douglas, he's now retired from Naropa, but he's going to be teaching us Shambhala songs.
I'd like to say something about that, if I can add something.
Oh, good.
Shambhala is a tradition, meditative tradition, but it's also really a culture in Enlightened society. So it includes everything that would be in a culture, including songs. And so we have all these Shambhala, what we call Shambhala songs. And they're really, some of them are really beautiful and wonderful and powerful. And they're, you know, contemplative songs really is what they are. And Bill is a very world-renowned composer and artist. So it's amazing that he's coming and doing this. So he'll actually teach them to us. And so you don't have to have a good voice, because no one's listening. It's a week from this Friday, right?
Week from tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah.
So then on the 18th, which must be 2 weeks from Sunday, we're going to go to the Wild Animal Sanctuary. And there are 14 people? In Kingsburg, yeah.
15 what? Animals?
15 people. 15 people. Oh, we'll have a tour. A guy.
How many animals are there?
300?
More than 300.
Wow.
Is that Kingsburg?
East of Fort Lupton near Kingsburg.
Right. How long a drive is that from here?
Almost an hour.
Great.
Yeah.
So we're going to have lunch there?
At the end of the month. They are calling it a funeral for a friend of mine who passed.
Oh, wow.
And she wanted, that was her wish. She didn't want a memorial or a funeral. She said, we're going to have a funeral at the animal park. So I think it's the 28th or
29th. Yeah,
excellent. So I've never been there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
a lot of us haven't been there either.
This is the last day to sign up. So if you haven't signed up and you want to go, tell me tonight.
Did Angela sign up with you? That was the last week for the class time?
No.
You might have to tell her, since she didn't get...
Well, she knew.
Oh, she knew.
Yeah, she must have.
But I don't know if she knew. Tonight's the last night to sign.
Yeah.
Hopefully she got the email.
I'll text her on the way home.
Yeah, okay.
And who should she... How does she contact you?
My email was in the announcement. Is she getting the emails from the...
Well, I'll find out.
You have the email, so you can...
I do.
Aren't you on our email list?
I didn't get any emails from you this week.
Oh, really?
No.
Uh-oh.
Oh, did you get
that? We have that list. So, sign up on the list, right? Before leaving.
I did not
get an email.
Yeah.
I did last week, but maybe it takes a week to go through the system.
No.
I'll start. Don't tell you what it is.
We wait for the NSA to tell us who's
on the list. Once your security screening is done.
All right.
We'll end with a bell.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Happy birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Tomorrow, yeah.
How old are you?
60, I'll be 69 tomorrow.
69.
Wow, you don't look that old.
I'm not going to say what that number usually is.
It's
a very sexy number.